United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Flight from oppression. Hi, this is the Seminary Explorers, and I'm Jerry Christensen with a guest today whom you have met before, Justin Odula Mariamba from the Congo. When you heard from him, he was talking to Nelson Strobert about his vetting by the United States and by the United Nations in order to become a refugee after 17 years in refugee camps. He's now living in the United States and expecting to achieve full citizenship. Today, we're going to concentrate on his life before he was allowed to converse with the United Nations as a refugee or with the United States, how he got into difficulties with the Congo government, and what he suffered during his imprisonment. Odula, who were you working for or working with when your troubles began?
Yeah, thank you so much. when my trouble began, first I was working for the Red Cross. I was working in emergency rescue. It's where I started for the Red Cross. After the Red Cross, I joined a human rights activist. That was in 1997 that I joined the Red Cross. And then in 1998, I was working for Human Rights Association, which was dealing with the issue of the child soldiers.
And this association had a French name of ASADO,
African ASADO, Association for the Defense of the Human Rights. So it was kind of defending the rights of, it's kind of human watch, you know, but it's kind of, it is a national one, which is dealing with human rights violations. So whatever is happening in the Congo concerning the human rights violations, ASADO, they work in conjunction with the United Nations to kind of report the issue of violation in the Congo.
It's French?
Yeah, it is a French, yes. The name is in French, yes.
And the Congolese government is not happy with ASADO.
Yeah, the Congolese government is not happy for ASADO because, it's kind of the government is regarding ASADO is kind of disclosing, you know, the human rights violations. So that's why it's not really happy with ASADO. It's kind of different to the United States, whereby people got freedom of speech, you know. Whatever's happening, people are able to see. But in Africa, it's kind of different because when you review what the government doesn't want, so it sounds like you are against the government. So automatically, your organization going to kind of being jeopardized, so going to be at risk.
You were doing this work for ASADO then in secret while we would say in this country, your cover was the Red Cross.
Yeah, I was really covered by the Red Cross, but in ASADO, I was doing it in secret because human rights, we don't have a freedom of speech in the Congo. You cannot review what the government is doing. You cannot speak up what the government is doing. So one way to help others, it's kind of doing it in the secret. So, in international, it was known all over the world, but in the countries we are doing behind the closed door, so kind of in the secret because a lot of human rights activists, they were kind of persecuted. Some they fled the country, some they are outside of the country because of defending the rights and revealing the violation of human rights.
What was the main human right that you were trying to defend and that was being violated by the government and especially by the military?
Yeah, what I was kind of doing, I was dealing with the issue of the child soldiers. You know, in Africa, like in my government was using a lot of kids to just first getting them and then train them how to shoot a gun, you know, and sending them in the front line. So. And then getting kids like 7 years, 8, 10, you know, all those kind of stuff. showing them to shoot a gun and then sending them in the front line. So, and using the girls, you know, sex slaves, you know, during the war. So these are the stuff that we have been trying to work on because they need dignity and they need also life. If they want to join the military services by themselves, not by force, getting them so that they can serve the military. So it's a lot of people, even the government were using that, even the rebel side also, they were using the child soldiers. So we are trying to kind of prevent it because I was in the capital city, which is Kinshasa, where I was born. In the capital city, we are trying to prevent. But most of the cases was in eastern part of Congo, where the war is still ongoing conflict, you know. So a lot of kids, you know, those kids who have been raping women after being trained how to shoot a gun, all those kind of stuff. It kind of washed brain in their mind. They couldn't even think again. So they would do whatever they want to do. You know, it could even kill the parent. They had no mercy, kind of. So we have been trying in the capital city, we have been trying to prevent that by working on the demobilization of the child soldiers. So going to school, teaching, you know, having conference, speaking about the issue of the child soldiers, helping the kids to understand that what is most important is to go to school rather than join the military services. And then having a women days, talking to women, how they can help the kids to not join the military services. So this is what I was kind of doing so that at least we can help.
The children were sometimes kidnapped.
Yeah,
other times they did it, or the parents did it voluntarily.
Yeah, most of the kids were kidnapped. So they could come, just the way we are at home, they could come and then they kidnap the kids. They put them in the truck. So they had no choice, you see what I mean? They had no choice, they were kind of kidnapped. But some, they were joined by themselves. Mm-hmm. When they see the friend with the uniforms, you know, and they feel like, oh my gosh, I want to join. So they were kind of feeling that by themselves to join. But a lot of them, they were kidnapped by the former Kabila, the father, because I was there in the time of Kabila, the father, not the Kabila who is currently the president, but in the time of Kabila, the father, because they were using almost, what I know, 10,000 kids were kind of recruited to join the child soldiers. So they were kidnapped by the militaries.
The conflict you're referring to in eastern Congo, Kabila was the leader, Kabila Senior.
Yes.
And the president at that time was Mobutu. But this is a conflict that's been going on since Congo was kind of released from Belgium.
Yeah, what happens, the conflict that I'm talking about, it started in 1998, because in that conflict we lost 5 million, which is not spoken, you know. It's kind of genocide, but it was 5 million who died in that conflict in 1997, when Kabila wanted to host, you know, to kick out Mobutu in power. Because Mobutu was in power for, 32 years that he was in power. So one way to kick out Mobutu, it was, to use Kabila, and Kabila to use again guns, you know. And then Kabila was using the child soldiers, even Mobutu also was using the child soldiers. So that is where the conflict that I'm talking about, because that conflict started in 1997, where we lost 5 million, died in those two conflicts. And then when Kabila hosted Mobutu, and then the conflict was still going, the Kabila, the son, he took power. So, but the father was assassinated, was killed. So the son, and then he was in power. So even the son also was also using the child soldiers because they knew. So one way for them to win the war is to get the kids, and then you train the kids because they don't have thinking capacity, so they can do whatever they want to do. So those are the two conflicts which has killed a lot of people. The first one was to host Mobutu, to kick out Mobutu, and then the second one, when Kabila took power, because they had a coalition with our neighbors, you know, Rwanda, Burundi, and, you know, those neighbor countries to help Kabila, I mean, to host Mobutu. So those guys, it's like they had kind of agreement with Kabila, the father. So they wanted to remain in Congo forever. So one way Kabila said, you know, you guys, you should go back to your countries. You helped me, so I'm in power right now. So it's better you guys to go back in your country. So they didn't want to go back to their countries. It's where now the second war started, you know, in the eastern part of Congo. So where we lose a lot of kids, a lot of women were raped, a lot of stuff were devastated. So a lot of bad things happened, and we got a lot of refugees. It's because of these two wars, you know, all over the world.
Odila Madiamba is our guest today here on the Seminary Explorers, and we're talking about flight from oppression and flight from danger because of his youthful life in the Congo. And I should say we're broadcasting before a live audience. That will always bring a chuckle, Madiamba, don't worry, that live business. And at St. James Lutheran Church in downtown Gettysburg, and after this interview, Madiamba will be open to questions and discussion for the remainder of an hour. One day your secret was discovered, and you were no longer able to sustain your private freedom and were arrested. What happened?
Yeah, what happened, as I said, we are kind of organizing conference, talking to schools and different places. As one way to prevent, you know, the issue of the child soldiers. So during the Women Days, it's where after the conference, Women Days, because Women Days was the day that I was arrested. At the end of the conference, I went home and then I was arrested. I didn't know that during the conference, we had kind of, secret service. They were there inside. So. And then from there, I was arrested by saying that I'm kind of betraying the government, you know, revealing the information because I was working also in the Red Cross. So I was arrested and then I was put in jail on the same day. That was in Women's Days because of the defense of human rights and the issue of the child soldiers. I was put in the jail where our prison is very, you know, very horrible. So beaten in the prison, and they don't give food in the prison like in Congo. It's difficult. The treatment was really not good. You can put him down and then whip you anyhow. So there is no right, something like somebody who can defend you when you are in the prison.
You were not given a lawyer, not given a chance to call a lawyer.
No, we don't have kind of lawyers.
No food.
When you are arrested under the government, there's no lawyer.
So the bathroom is a pail on the center.
No, it's very worse. You can just, you know, pee just there. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you want to do just there. Yeah, so,
how did the guards treat you? Were they rough? Were they abusive?
They were very much abusive. Like in our prisons, very much abusive in Congo. So they'll beat you. They'll do whatever they want to do.
Did they want to get information from you about the organization?
Yeah, in fact, what they wanted is to know what I was doing. The main idea it was to kill me. That was the main idea because. Killing in Congo, it is something that's very easy, because especially for those who are working for human rights. It is the government for them to be at peace. It's just a matter of killing. So that's what they always do, even for politicians and human rights. So the idea was it was just kind of to kill me, and then so that they end the stories. But I was beaten. They was doing whatever they could do. I thank God because I had to write a letter to my parents because they didn't know that I was, you know, in the prison. So I sent a letter through a friend. I'd kind of a visit. Somebody came to visit my friend in the jail. Right. So I took that opportunity to send a letter to my parents. And then my parents had to work hard to do kind of connections, you know. to people he knew so that I can escape, because they knew that I would be killed. That was the aim. So that's how my father worked hard so that I can escape the jail.
Did he send someone, and was that someone a professional or a friend, or you don't know? You don't know the name of the man.
Yeah, I don't really know the name of the man, but it's like the man also, he was a little bit, he had a good position, I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, in the government. So.
Okay.
Because it's not everybody working the government, they like the government, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some they work the government, but they are against the government, what the government is doing. So it's like that man also, although he was working for the government, but he did not want what the government was doing. So I think it's the man who came and helped me to escape the jail.
Was somebody important, but
yeah.
You'll never know because he was keeping his identity
a
secret.
Yeah, he was keeping his identity. It was kind of top secret, so couldn't.
How did you get out of the country then?
Yes, and then after that, I went somewhere. He took me in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went kind of in the bush, but in the capital city. So it's where I kind of hidden for some days. Mm-hmm. I was hid there. And my parent was working. My father was working at the airport, air controller. So it's where he works. He was working, and then he had to see in which way I can get the plane from Kinshasa to the Lubumbashi, which is another province in Congo. So from there, I got the planes. So I escaped to Lubumbashi. But even though I was still in Congo, but my life was too at stake, at risk. So the best way for me to be alive, it was to be out of my country. That was the best way to be.
Mm-hmm. Did you walk across the border?
Yeah,
then, or?
In the cross, I used a truck. I used a truck.
Okay.
I just pay money. I just entered illegally into Zambia by using a truck and then putting me, you know.
Into a refugee camp there, too.
Yeah, when I reached Zambia, I have to go to the United Nations because all refugees are under the United Nations, the UNHCR. So I went to the UN.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go through vetting process for interviews to see why I want to be a refugee, you know, all kind of stuff. After that, they found that my ground was genuine. So I was given, refugee status, but with condition not to get involved to Zambian politics.
We have already talked about the conflict in Congo. Let's go back a bit. To my recollection, 1960 or something, when Congo became a free nation, out from under the thumb of Belgium. There was conflict already with Patrice Lumumba,
yes.
And some of those other famous names, and Dag Hammarskjöld.
Dag Hammarskjöld, yes.
What and the before we talk about that, what makes Congo so important to all the colonial powers? The resources are much greater than most of us realize, aren't they?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Most of our conflict, like in Congo, it is all about natural resources. The resources that the country have. So it's kind of bring ongoing conflict before independence, because Congo, it was kind of a properties for the Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
So the Belgium, it's where they could have all the resources, leopard. So he had everything in Congo. It was like his kingdom. So upon independence, our country was still in conflict, leadership, it was a problem in our countries, leadership among ourselves. So the time our first president was Kasavubu was in power, so he had a lot of conflict tensions between themselves with our prime ministers, who was Lumumba. So and then at the end of the day, they wanted to separate Congo to have a secession in Katanga. So conflict. Until the Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld, who was the UN Secretary General, who died because he wanted to bring peace in Congo. He was from Sweden, guys. He's a Swedish guy. So when he wanted to bring peace in Congo, so he was killed. He had a plane crashed in Zambia. So we always commemorate Dag Hammarskjöld Living Memorial every 18 September. because the work he did for peace, and then he was a victim because he worked for the United Nations. So, and then at the end of the day, Mobutu had a coup d'etat, you know. Mm-hmm. He took power by force by using, you know, the mm-hmm. militaries. Yeah. So even Mobutu was there for 32 years, it was kind of kingdom. So no free and fair elections, whatever. So, you know, sharing resources with international communities. And then at the end of the day, also the international community, they were against Mobutu. You know, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So they wanted also him to be out of the power. So there's a lot of conflict. So all the conflict that is going on in my country is because the resources that is in Congo, like in eastern part of Congo, there is coltan. It's kind of chips that they are making cell phone, computer, mm-hmm. all kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's coming from that area, eastern part of Congo. Diamonds. So, copper. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot. So those are the items that are...
All the rest of us want to get our hands.
Yeah, on everybody so want something, one portion of that.
It's a great case of neocolonialism. Yes. What's next for you personally? What's next? What are you hoping to do? What are you doing now? What are your aims? Are you aiming for citizenship in the United States?
Yeah, right now I'm kind of aiming to get my citizenship in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I'm going to school because I was when I was in Africa, I was just focusing on working, you know, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So right now I want to focus on my studies, then getting my citizenship, and then to see how I'll keep on helping others as well in the United States and outside of the United States. And other refugees in the world, you know. So this is what I'm kind of having kind of vision, because I know the pains of refugees. I know how they are going through. So I really want to help also to share the pains and to help them to lift also others maybe who are going through the same situations, you know, to help them. But I really want to first focus on my studies and, you know, after that, and then getting citizenship. After that, I'll see how I can help. I'm doing human services, but I want to do most on mental health programs, so that I can help. Because I worked when I was in the refugees camp. I was most working on the issue of trauma, because a lot of refugees are traumatized because of the bad situation. They have lost everything they had. They have lost beloved ones, children, you know. Some they were able to see how they are killing their parents, you know, see what I mean? Some they were husband, they were killed, so single ladies, you know, there's a lot. So I was kind of working in the area of trauma to help those, especially women who are a survivor of reps, women, to kind of lift them a little bit, to give them hope, dignities, because they had a lot of flashback, nightmare, you see what I mean? So kind of helping them. So I think I'm trying to pray God, if I was to maybe in 5 years, maybe 10 mm-hmm. years, to kind of helping those guys, those staff, because I know the pains, I know how they're going through. Even refugees who are coming, also in the United States, and to be part and parcel helping them. I know a drop of water can make a difference, even though it can be little, but can still transform and do something into their lives. Yeah.
Odila Madiamba is our guest today. He is formerly the Congo, now the United States. We've been talking about flight from oppression and danger. I'm Jerry Christensen, and for the Seminary Explorers, have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.